Randy with you here on a Tuesday morning. Randy McMichael out this week, down in the at a beautiful beach location celebrating. Today is his wife's birthday, so happy birthday to Donna McMichael as they celebrate. Abe Gordon in for Randy all week long. Good morning to you, Abe. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. My throat's a little sore. I think it might have just been from running in the cold. I don't know.
Could be. Tough day to have a sore throat, though, when you're pulling double duty.
I'll be all right.
Okay.
It's not that sore.
Power through it. It was sore enough to bring it up, like the first thing you said on the air.
I didn't know what else to say to how am I doing? Like,
I don't.
Because what is, I mean, you know me. We've worked together long enough. Like, what is my regular answer? I'm doing all right, I guess.
I guess, let me rephrase it, and I'll rephrase it for the remainder of the week. And then you can just sort of have carte blanche to lead things off, and then I'll try to steer things back towards maybe where we wanted them to go. What's got you fired up this morning? Because there must be something.
Yeah, there's always something.
What is it?
NBA getting going tonight. I'm really interested for that, and I know we'll talk about the Hawks a lot more tomorrow.
Sure.
Because I've already started on the rundown, and we're leading with Hawks.
That's opening.
Just get ready.
Right, unless something.
Yeah.
Right, but it's opening night tomorrow night for the Hawks. Opening night tonight for the NBA.
For a couple of teams. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just like last night with the Bucks. Obviously, it was, as a Falcon fan, we were rooting against the Bucks. You never root for injuries.
Unless you're a Cleveland fan.
Well, right. Good call. But, I mean, man. What an opportunity now. Like it again, don't root for injuries, but there's not a better week to be heading into Tampa.
Yeah,
or week with what they're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to sort of be of two minds about it. Like, nobody's happy that guys get hurt. Nobody wanted those guys
also,
to get hurt.
But also, as a Falcons fan, take the advantages.
Of course. Those guys aren't playing, and that's an advantage that the Falcons have. Now, maybe that ramps up the pressure a little bit. I would say that it probably does, coming off the performance that they had on Sunday against Seahawks.
Yeah, don't sleepwalk and take another team lightly just because of injury.
Yeah, I know.
Don't get me started on that discussion.
Now I worry that they're going to see that
Mike Evans can't beat us
and Godwin are injured, and they're going, oh, good, we can not try again. Because obviously they tried, but whatever happened on Sunday against the Seahawks, where they showed up flat and just sort of sputtered their way through 60 minutes and into a 20-point loss to a team that they're not 20 points worse than. I mean, you can lose games to anyone in the NFL.
Any points worse than.
No, I think they're better. Yeah, I think they're better than the Seahawks, certainly with a home field advantage. But they weren't on Sunday, and that's the way that it goes. So now that Tampa has played and pretty well got smoked last night until the end, and then they worked their way back into
it. I'll tell you what, because we were talking, you went 4-0 in your picks.
Okay.
Bo went 4-0 in his picks, and I needed the Ravens last night, and Tampa starts this miracle under 6-minute comeback. I'm like, hey, I need this win.
How much did you need? How much were they?
If they had scored
spread?
One more touchdown.
Okay. So the spread
I was three and a half.
Three and a half. Okay.
If they had gotten one more, I was like, this. Don't cost me this.
That would have qualified as a bad beat
for me.
Sure,
yeah.
Yes. When they were up, when they went on a run of 34 consecutive points, and when they scored that final touchdown, I was like, all right, this is fun to watch. I'm enjoying this. Because I love watching Lamar Jackson play. I love watching Derrick Henry play, and what that offense has turned into is incredible. But I was like, all right, we'll get a little extra sleep tonight. We'll just go to bed. 34-10 seems like a time to turn it in.
I wanted to.
I don't need to click over to ESPN Plus, no offense to the Cardinals and Chargers, but I'm not watching that. Cardinals won 17-15.
Good game.
Yeah.
Field goal to win it.
It was a close game.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something like that.
You know what I mean? So, I think sometimes there's a difference between a good finish and a good game.
Fair
or
enough.
A close game and a good game. They were doing a good job on the Manning cast of checking in with Scott Hansen from Red Zone. They'd have him come on and give you little updates every now and then and check you in on the game. But yeah, fun night last night for the most part. Obviously hate to see people get injured, but you're right. That is a benefit to the Falcons headed into their matchup against the Bucks on Sunday. Chance to go 2-0 against the Bucks this year. Chance to get to 4-0 in the
division. Yeah.
And really separate themselves.
Could
from
be
the
3-0
rest of the
on
team.
The road.
The problem is that, yeah, absolutely. Yes. 3-0 on the road. Great. Too. You're 2-3 at home. Frustratingly.
We'll just get the 6 seed, play road games the whole time.
Yeah, just exactly. Road game your way to the Super Bowl. Yeah, the problem is you start taking care of business in the division, but if you're not taking care of business in these other games that you absolutely can win, like the one on Sunday against Seahawks, it's just frustrating. But anyway, lot of time this week to get into that, and we will spend plenty of time talking about what it's going to look like on Sunday against the Falcons and the Bucks. Mike Conti going to join us at 11:40. I'll be honest with you, I did not expect to be talking about an Atlanta United playoff game. when we thought about Mike Conti being on every single Tuesday at 11:40. But here we are. They've got a game tonight right here on the radio station against Montreal. Joseph Martinez plays for them. If they win, they move on to take on Miami and Messi, and that would be a lot of fun. So hopefully they can do that. We'll talk to him about that tonight. The Hawks season starts tomorrow night, and Jalen Johnson just got a whole bunch of money.
Cha-ching!
5-year, $150 million contract extension for Jalen Johnson. Kind of felt like, I mean, we knew they were trying to get something done before the season started, just with where he was at with his rookie contract, the way that he's played and all of that. You saw some other guys that were in a similar situation to him as far as their careers. And
well, there was a deadline on Monday.
Right, right.
So he had to get it done or else it would just kind of creep itself into the season.
Right, you have to get it done before the season starts. I like it. I know that you see the $150 million number, and that's a big number. It certainly is. Well, I think it is historically. I think you still, I mean, look, $150 million is a lot of money, period. It's just a lot of money.
All right. So right? Obviously, it is a lot of money.
That, and I think that's it for a lot of people. You sort of see that, and it's like, oh, that's really, he's good. Have I seen? And you have to put it into the context of a couple of things.
We've been burned before.
True. But what the NBA is currently, financially, I mean, guys
and continues
are just
to be.
Getting
it's just more and more.
If you really want to take a trip down a mind bender of contracts, just Google highest paid NBA players and look at the next like 2 to 3 years out of what some of these guys are going to be making. It's wild. I think it's a healthy thing to just separate that from reality, because it's not reality. It's the reality for them, but it's not the reality for, you know, most of us that are looking at it and thinking about it and talking about it. In reality for the Hawks, like if Jalen Johnson becomes the guy that they think that he can be, $30 million a year is going to be a bargain in a year from now. Like
it's the Ronald Acuña deal.
It's a beautiful. It's not quite that, but
well,
he's
not the best player in the game like Acuña is. But it trends in that direction. You, if he becomes what we think he can become, which is potentially good enough to supplant Trey as the one, potentially. I don't mean face of the franchise. I mean just on court, focal point stuff. $30 million's nothing.
Yeah.
That guy's making 65, 70 mil.
I guess you have to ask yourself what you think that he, like, everyone has a different opinion of what his ceiling is, I suppose, and no one knows what it is, really. I think I'm a little bit less
gung-ho to jump there.
I think that he's really good.
So
I think he's
I'll
a really good player. I don't know that there's going to be a day where he's the number one option on this team with Trey, because I think Trey is... For all that he isn't, I still think Trey and what he does offensively is one of the best weapons that you've got.
Let me follow up on that. Do you think right now Trey is a top 30 player in the league?
I think he is. I do. I think that he is. Okay. I think he's probably somewhere between 20 and 25.
Do you think he can get better than 25 or 20? Because that's where I'm headed. I think in a perfect world, and obviously... You run the simulation 100 times, maybe Jalen Johnson doesn't reach it. But
I think Trey can be a top 15 player in the NBA.
Do you? Okay.
Given the right supporting cast on defense.
All right.
Now, that's reliant on others. Well, what I think the argument you're going to make is that Jalen Johnson independently can become something like that.
I love Trey. I think there's probably a very high ceiling for Trey. I think there might even be a higher one for Jalen.
Well, there's just such a limit with Trey on the
physicality
defensive side
too,
of the ball.
The physical aspect.
Like he's just
of it,
not
yeah.
ever going to be, you know.
And they keep changing the rules to you know, burn Trey to the ground, which doesn't help.
He seemed to manage, though. He seemed to still be very productive offensively with all the rule changes. But Jalen Johnson got a 5-year, $150 million contract extension last night. Love to see it. Season starts tomorrow, and hopefully he and Trey can start building something. I do think building is what this year is going to be about. I think there'll be some good moments. I think there'll be some tough moments because I think that they're really young and they're going to be building together. But cool to see him get rewarded for having a nice start to his career. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into what's trending here on a Tuesday morning. Thanks for being with us. This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Third down and seven from the Bucs 13. Lamar wants to throw. Slings it. Complete. Henry at the five. The King is in! Five touchdown passes for Lamar. And with 6:32 left to play in Tampa, the Hayes and Lamar!
Yeah, it was. For all intents and purposes, that was the Ravens beating down the Bucs last night on Monday Night Football. I guess nobody told the Bucs because the Bucs made a feverish comeback in the fourth quarter. They scored 21 points, recovered an onside kick. Unfortunately, in the attempt to make that comeback, had some pretty significant injuries, the most notable being Chris Godwin, who they didn't even show the replay again because it was so – you could see it when it happened. They didn't, I think, smartly show it. If you want to see it, you can go on Twitter and people will show
sure
it to
don't.
You. But it's pretty gross. I mean, you dislocate an ankle, that foot's going to be pointed. And so he's going to miss the remainder of the year. You were just telling me about a moment that he had with the trainer as he's getting carted off the field.
Said the trainer, and he says, back to work. And I assume he voices the trainer's name. It looked like he said John, but I don't want to miss, you know, it may not be John.
Yeah, John's
but he just looks at him like they're square in the face, just relatively calm, and says, back to work, John.
Damn.
It's a hard moment.
Yeah, that's a tough
badass.
That's a tough guy badass moment for sure. Certainly sucks for him and Tampa. Mike Evans hurt also. So their next game's against the Falcons, and that's certainly something that the Falcons will benefit from, not having them on the field.
You think AJ Terrell can defend Sterling Shepard?
Jalen McMillan. I think he can.
McMillan dropped a touchdown yesterday.
I think he can. He goes to being their number one now, right? Or
Shepard probably.
Is it Shepard?
Kate Otten? Wide receiver one?
I mean, Kate Otten went for 100 yards last night. Kate Otten and Jalen McMillan, just a couple Huskies. Just a couple Washington Huskies catching touchdowns. They don't play for the team anymore, though, Abe, so you got nothing to worry about on Saturday. I'm sure you weren't worried, but...
I already picked Indiana in my picks.
The spread is...
6.5.
Is disrespectful.
I took it at 6.5.
Six and a half.
If it changes in my favor, I'll adjust it.
Six
changes,
and a half.
Not in my
Indiana
favor.
Should be favored by 16.5.
Well, that's why I locked it in at 6.5.
What a joke. Anyway, we got all week to talk about that. That's where game day is. Going to be in Bloomington. But as for last night, the Ravens continue to roll. They've won a bunch in a row now. Lamar's playing. Seems like we say this every year, but Lamar's playing better than he did even the last time that he won the MVP. I guess just give it to him again. Five touchdowns last night. Derrick Henry runs for 169 yards on 15 carries. One of which, I mean, he just gets out on the sideline, and I realize somebody caught him, but, like, he shouldn't be moving that fast. It's not fair. Shouldn't be doing that. But he was, and good luck trying to stop him. I guess the guy was able to tackle him all the way down the field, but...
He took an angle.
No thanks.
Took an angle.
No thanks.
He almost tiptoed the sidelines again later in the game and almost broke one. I didn't see him step out. They blew it dead, but...
Yeah.
He's Lamar...
Also a freak.
Thing about Lamar, I mean, did you? I know. I think you had gone to bed. No. You saw the Mark Andrews touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, what a blank you moment because it's a chip shot field goal to go up three possessions.
Yeah, we'll
and
just
they're
go
like,
for it.
We'll just
let's go for it. On
it's like fourth and three.
Yeah. Where did? Yeah. Exactly. Because they got nothing on third down.
And he is like, right. Wide open in the end zone. We're like,
and that's
all right,
the exact
man.
Same play they ran last week. And I don't know if it's the exact same play.
Right.
I'm sure. Tell me the nuance difference, but it looked very similar to the play they ran last week that got Mark Andrews a touchdown in a similar spot.
The offensive confidence for that team because of what, like, there was a game where, like, it's just covered downfield and he starts rolling left and it's just like 17 yards on a first down, like so easy.
Yep.
Everything looks like it's coming easy to him, which is how it looks when the top quarterbacks in the game are operating at that level. Like, for Brady, it always felt easy, looked easy. Same thing with Peyton. Right now, in the run game, in the pass game, all of it, play calling, like just complete command, complete control, it looks easy for Lamar.
Yeah, the hard part for them is this is kind of the same script, right? This is sort of, now they have Derrick Henry now, so it's a bit different, but this is kind of what it looked like last year for the majority of the season on his way to winning his second MVP. Then they get to the playoffs.
Yeah,
and
if the narrative doesn't change, then you're still stuck.
They just kind of, they kind of lose their identity
that's
in that
one
game.
Team.
Against, yeah, that's right.
It's one team.
It is. It is. It's
and
one,
that team
it's
doesn't,
team.
I know they're the last undefeated, but they don't look like they have.
Yeah, they didn't last year either.
I agree.
Until the playoffs came around.
Now the defense is still ramped up. I tried to pick them up in fantasy this week.
Good,
they're playing the Ravens. Raiders, I'll take that chance.
No, I know. That's the hard part. Is Lamar is very, very good. He is incredible. He's one of the best.
No, but you're right.
Henry's
supposed to be the difference.
He just happens to also be playing at the same time as one of the greatest of all time,
yeah.
And he's got to play him in the playoffs every single year. Maybe this year's different, but my point was, the hard thing is, this is all great, and they
none
should enjoy every second
until,
of it. Right.
Yeah.
You got to do it then in
well,
order
this is
to
the
get
Penn State
past
argument.
It. It's the Penn State argument.
Yeah.
It's the Braves. You know
I
what I mean?
I talk about that.
All this stuff is fun, but you
got
to get back to the postseason
one.
And do it. They did. They did. There's no doubt about it. All right. Where do we want to go from here? That's right. Kirk Cousins talking about Tampa. Here he is.
You know, this is pro football, and you have to go back and have candor about, hey, I got to be better. This has to be better. Make the improvements, corrections, and then put together a strong week of practice, and then go with a resolve to Tampa and plan on playing your best football you possibly can. That's what it takes to win in this league, and that's what we have to do.
Yep, that's all true, whether it's Tampa or anybody else. I guess that was specifically about Tampa because that's who they play next. But, yeah, hopefully they do. We got all week to get into it, and so we will spend a lot of time this week getting into it. Atlanta United's got a playoff game tonight against Montreal. The wild card round, Joseph Martinez is on the other side.
Yes.
Last time they faced Joseph Martinez and Montreal, he scored a couple goals and they lost.
Yes.
Hopefully that doesn't happen tonight.
The first goal he scored was off of a boring free kick, which was just atrocious defending. The second one took some quality. I mean, the first one took quality and skill, but, like, poor defending. And so it's got to be the focal point, man. Like, that guy's been one of the best goal scorers in the MLS, even through an injury, over the last decade.
He
can't get free.
One of the best goal scorers in the history of the MLS.
Yeah, yeah. He can't get free like that. And so that's obviously a focal point. And we'll see how it goes. Atlanta United's so impossible to predict.
Yeah,
nothing carries over game to game, half to half. I don't.
Their season was supposed to be over a month ago, and they just kept on figuring out ways to win and getting help. And
they got a lot of help.
And look, they're in. They're in. So keep on winning now that you're
I've seen nothing that makes me believe that they can't go into Montreal and compete.
Okay. Pre-game starts at 6:30 tonight. Abe will be a part of that coverage. Kickoff at 7:30 with Mike Conte and Jason Longshore. Mike Conte will join us in about 15 minutes from right now, live from Canada. I assume. He's got to be in Canada. Hopefully got those international roaming minutes. They don't do that anymore. The NBA season starts tonight. Two games tonight, and then everybody else starts tomorrow, including the Hawks. So we'll spend more time on the Hawks tomorrow. We mentioned it in the first segment, but if you didn't hear or haven't seen it yet, Jalen Johnson and the Hawks agree to a five-year contract extension worth $150 million. Congrats to him, man. They sign him up long-term, and hopefully now him and Trey can really start to build something because that's the core. Those are the guys. You got Reese Hoshea, of course, the number one pick. Dyson Daniels, who you traded for, and there's other pieces. But that's the 1-2 punch that this team is stacking the chips behind, and hopefully it works out. As for tonight, you got the Knicks and the Celtics. Celtics defending champs at 7:30, and then the Timberwolves and the Lakers at 10. LeBron James and his son will be playing together. First time in NBA history that the father and son have played together. Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. are going to be there courtside, which is just awesome, as far as I'm concerned, and should be a fun night to start the NBA season.
Is there a chance they don't see the floor together?
0% chance. They will definitely.
Like just, there's no game
point,
situation where like we can't do it right now, man.
I don't think so. I think they will find a way to get them on the court together. At
is it
some
like
point.
Senior night? Bronny gets to start and it gets pulled 10 seconds. Ten seconds into the game.
I would guess just to be safe because I think the Wolves are probably going to handle the business tonight.
Right, if it's
them.
A blowout, you can get 2 minutes at the end of the game.
I just think they'll probably find a way to get him into the rotation end of the second quarter. Just get him out there for like the final, whatever it is, final 60 seconds, 45 seconds.
Are they
seconds,
on the
like
court
that.
Together for more than 90 seconds? Is that a good number?
That's a good number. Probably not.
Ooh.
Probably not, because that would be the moment there. And then if it does end
they
up
they get
being,
a foul with 48 seconds
well,
left in the first half.
If it ends up being a blowout, at the end, LeBron's not going to be on the
right.
floor. So Bronny
but he might
be
for a couple minutes if his son's playing.
Right. Or if they're blowing the Timberwolves out, maybe that's how you find a way to do it, and then they can actually play together for a little while. But if they're getting blown out, that's probably not a great time to try to do that.
I know a lot of it's about Bronny, and I get that. Dalton Connect might actually make a difference for that team, though.
Yeah, he might. I mean,
he can score. He can still score, man.
I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. But
score.
Yeah, I know, but how
that's
many,
it.
He's going to come off the bench. How many minutes is he going to play? All that kind of stuff.
36 in the preseason.
Yeah. Kobe Bufkin had 31 in the preseason game. You know, so
now he's hurt.
Yeah, now he's hurt.
No.
But yeah, look, I don't know.
Which game are you looking forward to the late game more than the yes, early one, the Knicks?
I am because I love
rebuilt the Knicks a little
I
different.
I love the Timberwolves. I love the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I'll be honest with you.
How are they different
not
without
Not to Kat? Be a hater, I love them without Karl-Anthony Towns, who is probably my least favorite player to watch in the NBA.
Well, you can watch him in that first game.
Because he's so good, but so frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they replaced him with some tougher guys that maybe fit a little bit better. Naz Reid now starts instead of him next to Gobert. And, I mean, the Timberwolves made the Western Conference Finals last year, so I think they're poised for another run. I think the Celtics are the class of the East, and I still don't think it's all that close. I think kind of like last year, the Knicks.
Who's even second?
And a handful. Probably the Knicks.
Knicks, Pacers.
I don't buy the
if
Pacers.
If they're ever healthy, Philly?
Which
no,
they aren't going to be. Like, just, I don't. I wouldn't be surprised if the Pacers have a
step back.
No, I think the Pacers are definitely going to take a step back.
Is Halliburton focused?
I wouldn't be surprised if the Sixers have a nice regular season.
Yeah.
But you're not going to convince me that a team of guys that can't stay healthy and have never won anything together are going to get over the hump by adding a guy who can't stay healthy and has never won anything. You know what I mean? Because that was the move that they made to add.
I'm interested to see. I don't know if you buy like this storyline. I am interested to see how the Celtics handle being on top, kind of a hunted mentality thing. I'm interested to see how that plays with guys like Tatum and Brown.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes a difference. It certainly won't like make a difference in a one game tonight, but like just over the course of the season.
Yeah, I don't think they'll win 64 games again.
Right.
I don't think they'll do what they did last year just from a prove-it standpoint. Mid-50s, something like that, just because you don't have to.
I would say, is that about just getting to the playoffs?
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think that Knicks, Bucks, obviously, if they can stay healthy. The rumors are Damian Lillard looks really good. Last year kind of came in a little bit out of shape, apparently. I think Orlando is going to be pretty solid.
They're a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
I don't know how good they are on the top end, but they're fun to watch.
Play good defense.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Hawks.
Sleeper.
Yep. Don't sleep on them. That's what they say. I'm not. I'm awake. I'm wide awake. I've had a lot of coffee. Mike Conte is going to join us next. We'll talk a little Hawks with him as their season starts tomorrow. We'll talk some Atlanta United with him as well, as they've got a playoff game tonight. So don't go anywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
50 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to say, we get a Montreal artist. At least we got a Canadian. It's all right. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Tuesday morning. 20 minutes away from getting into an NFL no huddle. Week 7 in the books after Monday Night Football's doubleheader last night. We'll start looking ahead to the Falcons and the Bucks as well. Bucks with some devastating injuries last night on Monday Night Football. If you have not heard about those yet, we'll get you all caught up in 20 minutes from right now. Before we do that, though, this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We head up to Montreal, where Mike Conte is getting set to call an Atlanta United playoff game tonight. Mike, how are you?
I'm great, Andy. How are you?
Good. I forgot to play your intro. I got so wrapped up in all the stuff I was doing there, I forgot to play your intro, so let's play it. There we go. That's why it felt weird. Hey, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Andy. That feels much less weird.
All right. So we got a playoff game tonight between Atlanta United and Montreal. For those of us that thought the Atlanta ended a few weeks ago and they kept staving off elimination, who deserves most credit for that? Like, they obviously had to fight against the odds for a number of weeks now. Who deserves the most credit for that?
Well, I think Keno deserves a lot of credit for it. I mean, he's the leader and the tactician and the person who's selecting the lineups. And I think he deserves a lot of credit, as does Brad Guzan, because of the leadership aspect that he brings. But I think if you're talking about just performances on the pitch, I think Pedro Amador has been a big, big difference maker for this team since he came in the summer transfer window. And it feels like every match he plays with Atlanta United, he gets a little better. And he had an assist on the early goal by Saba on Saturday, which was enormous. Atlanta United has spent the least amount of time in the leading position of any of the 29 teams in MLS this year to get a goal in the 7th minute against Orlando and just get out on the front foot and put yourself in a position for Atlanta United where they're not chasing a game, where they have a little bit of a cushion, that's enormous. And Pedro Amador created that first goal. He's been creating a lot of really good goal-scoring opportunities for this team. So if you're looking for difference makers, if you're looking for, you know, what's changed over the last nine matches since Leagues Cup where Atlanta United's gone 3-3-3, Pedro Amador really stands out to me as one of the big difference makers.
Mike, obviously Atlanta United has had some issues over the course of the season carrying momentum game to game. And I think one of those reasons might be they don't really have a go-to. I think we've seen at times Daniel Rios has been there. Saba, as you mentioned, sometimes it's from the back, it's Goose. Amador, who's been outstanding. Jay Fortune. Well, when you look at a game tonight matching up with Joseph Martinez in Montreal, who are you looking towards to step up for Atlanta United?
Well, I think you need to get more production from Alexi Maranchuk. Ultimately, Abe, as you know, because you've been covering this team all year, the difference makers in Major League Soccer are your designated players. You know, there are a lot of really, really good players in this league. Every team has really good players. But under the salary structures, the league really relies on its designated players to be the elite difference makers. And Atlanta United, you know, after selling Thiago Almada and selling Yorgos Yakimakis earlier in the season, they really haven't had too much difference-making performances out of the player spot. Alexi Maranchuk's got to be that guy tonight. He could have iced the game Saturday if he played against Orlando right after halftime. Wasn't very well taken. I thought Maranchuk was not as effective as he needed to be in that game on Saturday. I think a good performance by Maranchuk tonight could be a real difference. It could also really give Montreal some problems. You know, the thing about Montreal is they concede a lot of goals. If you look at their season stats, they concede a lot of goals. They don't score a lot of goals. If you get up early on this team, if you put them under pressure, especially with someone like Maranchuk getting into dangerous spots early, I think that's going to throw Montreal off balance, and that's going to give them some problems where they might have to pivot. But Alexi's got to be a lot better on Saturday in Orlando.
What are some of the just sort of the season long, I don't know, season long, but recent games played factors into all of this? I know Atlanta United had to win over the weekend in order to even get to this game on Tuesday. As far as how tired guys are going to be and all of that. Also, is Montreal traditionally a tough place to go in and win? Like, what are some of the other factors that are going to play into tonight for Atlanta United?
Yeah, I'll start kind of backwards on that. Yes, Montreal is historically a difficult place for Atlanta United to come in and win. However, they did win here last year. So they have won here. This isn't like going to Red Bulls where you barely even scored a goal, let alone won. You know, you have a slightly better history up here. One thing that I think is really going to help Atlanta United tonight, from the standpoint of having to play on the road, the weather up here is insane. It might actually be warmer up here than it is in Atlanta, if you can believe that. So we're talking about kickoff temperatures near 70 degrees, clear skies. Like, that's a huge, huge break. It could be really, really cold this time of year in Montreal. It's not going to be. The weather's perfect. The other, I think, really big break that will help Atlanta United tonight is right up the hill from where I sit right now, the Canadiens have a home game tonight against the New York Rangers.
Oh.
So that's where I think much of the sporting attention for the city will be tonight. I think there's a chance the crowd on a couple days' notice on a Tuesday night with the Canadiens in town might not be very big. So this might feel a little more like a neutral venue situation than like going into a snake pit like you do at Red Bull Arena or Orlando or some of those other places. I think those factors align in Atlanta United's favor. As far as the legs are concerned, that's a really good point, really good question, because not only has Atlanta United had to turn around and play Saturday and then Tuesday, they've also had travel in the midst of that. They had to fly back from Orlando Saturday night. They had a really, really late kind of regen day on Sunday, did a walkthrough yesterday, and then got right back on a plane. Montreal was home Saturday, and they're home tonight. They have not had the same travel difficulties as Atlanta United. But I did ask around yesterday. Some of the guys on the team and on the technical staff told me They really aren't worried about the turnaround Saturday to tonight. They would be much more concerned about the turnaround if they have to, well, if they win tonight, which obviously they want to, but then having to turn around and play again Friday in Fort Lauderdale against the Super Friends, that would be, they say, a much, much tougher turnaround than what they're dealing with tonight. As far as relevant games that have come into play recently, look, there's a very recent meeting between these teams at the Benz, October 2nd. Montreal beat Atlanta United 2-1. Joseph scored twice. If that doesn't happen, if Atlanta United wins that game, this game tonight is being played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Mm-hmm. So Atlanta United has played Montreal twice this year. They lost both meetings. The performance up here in July was not very good, but Atlanta United had a red card in that game. Stian Gregersen got thrown out early in the second half, and as you know, Andy and Abe, I mean, red cards really dramatically change games. Both games were decided by one goal. Keep in mind this also. If you're even after 90 minutes, if you're level, you go straight to penalties. There's no extra time tonight. You go straight to penalties. So, in a way, I mean, if the legs are wobbly, and Rob Valentino makes that judgment early that the legs are wobbly and this is going to affect the match, in a way, then, you might be fighting just to try to get to penalties and try to win it that way and move on. You don't want to get to that point, but that is an option.
Mike, just looking for a quick injury update. Stian Gregersen left with leg tightness on Saturday. Do we know how available he is tonight?
He'll play. As far as I know, he was not on the injury report yesterday, so I think he's good to go.
Norwegians are tough. I mean, it's just one of the hallmarks of our people. What did you make of the – I mean, obviously everyone's happy for Jalen Johnson and the contract that he got last night. Were you surprised to see that happen last night, or is this something that was sort of coming?
Not totally shocked. It reminds me a little bit, and I hope this works out a lot better than the last instance I'm thinking about. Remember they did that deal with Dennis Schroeder right before the start of the 2015-16 season, and it was kind of like this. It was – wow, well, they don't have to do that, but that's kind of a team-friendly number, but also a good number for Dennis. I'm praying this works out much better than Dennis Schroeder worked out here, and I think it will. I mean, believe me, Jalen Johnson's, first of all, totally different player, different type of person, everything. This is a really good thing for Jalen Johnson, and I'm happy for him. If he continues on this development track that he's on right now, Andy, I think this is going to turn out to be a team-friendly deal in the long run. It is a little bit of a leap of faith, you know, 5 years at $150 million. But the way that Jalen has developed over the last 2 years, I think it's a reasonable leap of faith. And I think now, well, it's pretty obvious that the Hawks, and if you look at the way that they've been marketing themselves this offseason and everything, this is really Trey and Jalen's team.
Yep.
You hope that Ricochet can become the third big component of that. I think there's a good chance he will be. I really like what I've seen from him so far. This is the team. I mean, this is going to be your group going forward. You're not going to be building through free agency. You don't want to be building through the draft. This is your group. And I think you've made a statement, obviously, in the offseason by getting rid of DeJounte that this is Trey's team. And he made another statement last night that this is now Trey and Jalen Johnson's team. And I'm cool with that.
With that said, Mike, and I agree with you, like I think ever since the Eastern Conference Finals run, this team has kind of been mixed about the direction and what the plan ahead is. And now you certainly have a defined plan, and Dyson Daniels is part of that. Ricochet, as you mentioned, Jalen and Trey. With all of that understood, what do you think we should as a fan base have as expectations for this team? Obviously, growing together and improving is one thing, but in terms of potentially competing for where they've been the last couple of years in that play-in round, is that something that we're looking at?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's tough because you don't want to say, wow, things look great, and I really like the group that they've built. I like the plan that they have, and I like their chemistry. They should finish 10th. Womp, womp. Like, no, you don't you don't want that. You don't want to set the expectation
womp,
there, right?
Womp.
Yeah. I think, look, here's the thing. You look at the Eastern Conference, and there's some really good teams in the East, really good teams. Boston, obviously, the Knicks, the 76ers, I think, are going to be really good with Paul George. The Heat are always good. I haven't even mentioned the Bucks and the Cavaliers yet, who should be top four teams. Okay, the East has a lot of good teams. The East also has a lot of bad teams. Okay, the Hornets, the Wizards, the Pistons. the Hawks are not a bad team. They're not a great team. So where does that put you? Play-in area. You know, maybe the ceiling is sixth. But I'm going to tell you that when you look at the quality of teams in the Eastern Conference, if the Hawks were to finish sixth in the regular season with this group, or maybe you make a trade somewhere down the line, Quinn Snyder ought to be a Coach of the Year candidate. I mean, that would be a tremendous achievement. And I wouldn't rule it out. I really wouldn't rule it out. Mm-hmm. I think the key is going to be, what do you get out of Reed Hoshea, and can he overperform what is expected of him to do right at the outset of the season? And I don't want to put all my eggs in that basket, but again, I really loved what I saw from him in the preseason.
Mike, we appreciate it. Hawks get underway tomorrow night. Atlanta United with a playoff game tonight. I hope you get to enjoy a little bit of the Montreal weather while you're up there. Not just work. Sounds
beautiful. I am enjoying it thoroughly, and as soon as I get done with my next meeting, I'm going to go out for a walk. It's beautiful here. The leaves have changed and everything. It's
what a treat.
You know what it's like, Andy, when you get like a warm October day in the Pacific Northwest and the leaves have all changed. It's beautiful here, so I'm going to try.
I love fall foliage, Mike. Everyone knows that about me. We appreciate the time. Thank you. Mike Conti there, 92.9 The Game, Atlanta Hawks, Atlanta United broadcaster. He'll be on the call tonight with Jason Longshore. Starting at 7:30, Abe and Garrett will have the pregame starting at 6:30. Jason tells us there's a playoff history between Atlanta and Montreal that favors the city of Atlanta. Back in 1995, they went up there and took down the Montreal Impact in the old A-League playoffs in order to advance. So
sounds like revenge is on the minds of the Montreal.
History can repeat itself. I wish they were still called the Montreal Impact. It's a great name. It's an awesome name. What are they now? Like FC Montreal or something?
CF. Montreal. It's a French thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Everybody's got to be FC or CF or Real or
United.
Just be what you were. Like the Kansas City Wizards was a great name. And they had rainbows everywhere. It was awesome. It's my opinion.
Dallas Burn?
The Dallas Burn was great. Miami Fusion? You kidding me? The Tampa Bay Mutiny? Nobody had an S at the end of their mascot. It was all singular. I don't know. All right, we'll come back. We'll get you an NFL No Huddle to kick off the noon hour. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hour number two here on a Tuesday afternoon. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. A couple minutes away from an NFL no huddle as week 7 is now in the books. We're on to Tampa. Now we can actually be on to Tampa now that they've played.
Today's the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm still not. Like, we're still going to do, like, we got Raheem Morris telling us why the pass rush wasn't actually so bad.
We're on to Tampa about midway through the second quarter.
Yeah,
so.
Well, all the guys were on to Tampa post-game on Sunday, that's for sure. It seems like a lot of the reporters were, too, because a lot of the questions were about it. They were like, yeah, you know, I guess we lost the Seahawks. But you know what we really want to talk about is this next game. Like, no, we'll talk about what the hell happened on you guys don't want to? All right. Anyway, we'll let you hear from Raheem. We'll get back into that just a little bit, and we will start looking ahead. Tampa suffered some very serious injuries to some very important players last night on Monday Night Football. We'll get back into a college football conversation at 12:20. Coming out of what was a really incredible week, you were just giving me some of the numbers from the ratings for the broadcast on Saturday. 10 million or so were watching Alabama, Tennessee.
Yeah.
That rolled right into Georgia and Texas on the same network, right?
Yeah.
That was on the same
ABC
channel.
Yeah.
Georgia, Tennessee topped out at like 13 million something or other. Just a huge win on Saturday for that company. I know all of us watched it and most people listening watched it too, but yeah, that's why broadcast rights for college and pro football continue to break records every single time the contract negotiations are up. I know we're talking about the NBA season starting tonight. Will there be one game this NBA season that gets half as many viewers as the Georgia-Texas game got on Saturday night?
So here's my thing. It has to be an afternoon. It has to be a weekend afternoon.
It'll be Christmas.
Who's it got? Like,
it'll be Christmas.
It should be LeBron and it should be the Lakers Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be the game that would draw for me, Wemby and LeBron.
Mm-hmm. then that, well, you got the Lakers Knicks, or sorry, Spurs Knicks.
That's not
on Christmas.
No one on 76ers
or Celtics, Lakers Warriors, and then Nuggets Suns. So the answer is probably no.
No.
Like, and I'm saying just half. Like, you're just asking for half. Problem is the NFL is now colonized Christmas too. They're like, now we're taking that also. Like,
But those are all what, Netflix games? And they're still going to outdraw the NBA on Netflix?
Probably. I remember because was it last year or the year before that they had, because Christmas was Sunday, right? So the NFL had claim to it, and they put a couple games on it.
Yeah.
And like whatever the lowest rated game was that they had that day of the three games that they played had more viewers than all of the five NBA games combined.
Yeah, remember they had the Nickelodeon game and even that drew like 3 million? Yeah. You're like, I don't know, man.
And again, I don't care. I don't get any money from these games being broadcast. We're still going to talk a ton of NBA because we love the NBA on this show. But it's just food for thought. And, you know, it sort of explains, if you're ever wondering why you might be watching like a national show on TV, like some of the hot take shows, why do they only talk about this? Well, that's why. Right there. That's the reason why.
Yeah.
From a ratings perspective.
To get ready for the NBA season, not that I needed to get ready, but I did go back and watch Steph Curry in the Olympics, like against Serbia.
Yeah.
Just a treat of a couple minutes,
Just unbelievable performance. And I was out that next week, so I didn't get to talk about it at all. Like, Steph Curry just turning into Captain America.
It was.
And winning that game was
wild
to
watch.
It was wild.
It was still wild to kind of relive now.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's also just funny. It's just goofy.
Oh, like
it's funny because there's just, you got the best players in the world, and there's, when he gets on one, there's just nothing anyone can do. There's no level of defense. There's no, doesn't matter.
He's one of those guys that when he's on a heater, all you can do is just laugh. It's like, no way. He's not shooting a fadeaway. He just like crossover, behind the back, step back from 30 feet, bottom.
Well, because
like,
one begets the other, right? Like, now you're on a heat check. But the problem for like Steph heat checking is he makes his heat check and then he gets another heat check.
If you can remember, if you can rack your brain, because I think that's a very specific type of performance from a great athlete.
Right.
What's the like the most just like serious belly laugh you've ever had off of an athlete doing something in a moment like that? Because I know mine. It was Steph. It was when Steph pulled up like from half court to beat the Thunder in that game. Followed
Lillard,
very,
Dame's had a couple
followed
of those
very
too.
Closely by the Dame Lillard one,
yeah.
Also against the Thunder, where he just like Paul George wouldn't even respect it post game. He was like, "Nah, it's a bad shot." It's like, "Oh, you guys are going home, and the Blazers are on to the next round." And Dame put it.
Anyway. I'm gonna be honest, like the Solaire ball was a belly laugh because it was so like. So many home runs are like third row.
Right. That one was,
and it was so far.
And he slammed his bat and hit his chest. And everyone remembers that moment. When Mike Vick made those two Vikings run into each other, I laughed for
it. Was pretty good.
I laughed for 20 minutes.
It was pretty good.
Like, come on. Like, this guy's a superhero.
Does Marcus Mariota throwing the ball into no man's land count? For different reasons? Laughing for different reasons.
When Randy asked Marcus Mariota if the Ducks could cover the spread, and because the problem with this medium is only I got to see his face. The look on Marcus Mariota's face when Randy asked him that question, that's why it was funny. It was so good. It was so, so good. And to this day, Randy still is like, he's like, what do you mean? Like, I know.
You know
that's
what
the
used
best
to get me laughing?
That's the best part.
Like that back in the day was like high school mixtapes or high school, like back in the day, but
like
almost
Allen
before
Iverson's
huddle.
High school football tape.
The football one's always, but like you had like, the guys that turned into nothing, right?
Or like the Randy Moss Marshall highlights where he's just hurtling dudes and like returning punts and doing all
like
that kind of stuff.
Noel Devine, high school mixtape superstar.
Yeah, man.
Was it Sam McGuffey?
Meanwhile, Derrick Henry has that, but it's the NFL.
Just all
it's just his NFL highlights. They're the same thing. All right, let's get to an NFL No Huddle. NFL No Huddle every day to lead the noon hour. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Week 7 in the books. Falcons 4-3 through 7 games. Here's Raheem Morris talking about taking some positives out of the pass rush against the Seahawks.
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, you want them to get them on the ground, but it is definitely positive improvement by those guys. I believe yesterday we had the one sack by JSW. Mm-hmm. He made it a great move and great power rush. We had another, which you thought it was a sack at the time, when you get the fumble snap, muff snap out the backfield, and Rook made a really good rush and got around there and got a chance to touch him down. And then we had the intentional grounding with Damone getting elevated yesterday, making a play for us on that edge, being able to cause some stuff like nature. And then the hurries and all the stuff that was happening with Grady and some of the interior guys was really positive. It was really trending in a positive direction. And we just got to improve on that performance and get it better every single week.
I hope that they do. All of the stuff that he mentioned certainly happened. I don't know that the trend is in the right direction, but all the individual instances that he recounted there certainly did happen. I thought the Rook one was a sack. I don't know why that doesn't count as one. Fumble, whatever, you touch
the guy
they down.
Decide to use the term abort all the time, and like the quarterback aborts the play, and now it's a fumble,
it's a
tackle for loss.
Maybe this is a new thing, but like, guys would just run out of bounds behind
the line of
scrimmage, and it used to be a sack, and now it's
not. They're declared runners that point. So it's a tackle for loss, but not a sack.
Yeah. What's funny is sacks are tackles for loss.
Yes.
But not all tackles for loss are sacks.
Is this a square rectangle situation?
I guess so. I just think a sack shouldn't also count for a tackle for loss, because at the end of the game, like, a guy will have a great game, and then they'll tweet out his sacks, and he'll be, or his stats, and they'll be like, he had 3 sacks and 4 tackles for loss. It's like, well, he had...
So you want 3 sacks and 1 additional sacks. Tackle for loss is what you want to go with?
And 1 additional tackle for loss, because all 3 of those sacks were also tackles for loss. I just feel like, can it be 2 things? Can one thing be 2 stats? I guess it can, because they give him credit for 2 stats.
Well, a hit and a home run are 1 stat.
That's true. That's true. It's a good point. Too good of a point. I don't like it. I'm going to move on.
3-pointer is also a field goal made.
That's true. That's true. Here's Todd Bowles, the head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks, talking about Chris Godwin's injury.
He got an ankle, early indication that it's dislocated. We'll see. Doesn't look good.
The immediate.
He sounded
the very immediate sad. Indication was that it was dislocated.
Yeah, no, we saw it. The immediate indication was that we saw it, and it was disgusting. And
I did not see it.
I saw it.
I
saw it on Twitter. I saw it on Twitter.
I was hoping no one on my timeline. I don't like looking at those sorts of things. And so when Aikman mentioned that their truck is advising not to replay it, I always appreciate that. And I'm not like super squeamish, but I also don't enjoy watching those.
Yeah.
Like, as much MMA as I watch, you would think I'd be a little more, I don't enjoy watching those sorts of injuries.
Uh-huh. I don't either.
You cut a guy over the eyebrow, fine, whatever. But like that stuff, I was really appreciative that they didn't show it.
The bottom line is he's out for the remainder of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Evans out as well. So with the Falcons getting ready to take on the Bucks this weekend, they're out their top 2 wide receivers. Certainly advantageous for the Atlanta Falcons, no doubt about it. We'll get back into some of these other NFL stories in the 1 o'clock hour as Tua Tagovailoa spoke. He's expected to return.
I already took that line.
You did?
Yeah.
What is it?
3 or 2.5 or something.
Who do they got?
Cardinals? At home?
Interesting. All right.
I reserve the right to change it later.
Of course you can. You can do whatever you want. We'll come back and get into a college football conversation coming out of last weekend. I think if there was any doubt, there shouldn't have been, but if there was any doubt that you were going to not trust Kirby Smart in a big moment like that, squashed once again by the best coach in college football, where's your trust meter on some of these other guys? I told you where our mind was on Sark last week, and then he showed you why on Saturday night. We'll get Dan Lanning in the mix, Ryan Day, James Franklin.
This is not a good list.
Mario Cristobal. I think we have to specify what we mean and when we trust him. We'll get into it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Abe Gordon filling in for Randy all week long, 20 minutes away from the back page with Bo. Get back into the big story of the day, top of the 1 o'clock hour. Brandon Adams at 1:20 to talk some Georgia Bulldogs. I know he's very happy about what happened on Saturday night, for sure. He's been talking about it since then, but we'll get his thoughts on what all went into that game, what the aftermath sort of looks like and means, and start looking ahead, because next up is Florida. So
coming for you.
Cocktail party. Even you don't believe that.
I'm going to be there. I'm you going there to watch Florida play.
Yep.
Not win, but play.
Yeah, you'll be there. You're going on a cruise, and then after the cruise, you'll go, right?
Yeah, the day we step off the boat is the day they kick off.
Great. That'll be a lot of fun. Have you been to that game before?
I have, yes.
Okay.
Florida was a lot better back then.
Okay.
I saw the Tebow Stafford era.
All right.
Cocktail party.
Yeah, yeah. Those were harder times for Georgia fans. Times are better now. As we sort of transition into this head coaches in college football conversation, your answer there, or your tone as it relates to Florida, I think has a lot of relevance in the conversation that we're about to have about college football coaches and the trust meter, because I think it depends on who you ask, and I think it depends on what you're asking as it relates to which coaches in college football you trust the most. After Saturday, and probably before Saturday, but certainly after Saturday, I think the answer from the general college football fan, wherever you wanted to ask them anywhere in the country, is going to be very similar to the answer from a Georgia Bulldogs fan as far as where your trust level is in Kirby Smart. I think everyone's on the same page on that one, right?
Well,
Kirby is...
Well,
no?
Okay. I have some questions that can maybe just clear up my question.
Okay.
I don't necessarily... Kirby, obviously, on the whole of the job, he's an outstanding recruiter. I think they develop players that they recruit to high levels. That's why you see the NFL stuff. I think they have a better roster and better talent than everyone else.
I think for the most part.
Yeah.
But I think you start getting into 3 and 4 and 5 different schools that might...
Right.
You can but here's the thing. That wasn't what the conversation was on Friday. After Georgia went out there and did what they did on Saturday night, now everyone's like, oh, yeah, they're more talented. On Friday, it was Texas is better in the trenches. Texas has a better wide receiving core. Texas has maybe a better quarterback.
We didn't say that.
No, I said Texas has been better in the trenches, and I said they might be better in the trenches. I said I don't expect them to be, because I think Georgia's going to show up to this game with their hair on fire, and they did, but...
My caveat for Kirby is how good of a in-game manager. Like, it's tough.
I think he's significantly better than he was.
I think there was
moments early on where sometimes the emotion would get the better of him, and he would make a decision that he might not otherwise make.
Okay, but what was that? What was that squib kick there?
I don't see. Yeah, that was weird. I don't know
what that
was.
And I only asked because
did anybody ask about that after the game? By the way, because I never got an answer on what that was. I don't know if that was an accident. I don't know. Obviously, you weren't trying to hit the guy in the foot. It hit the guy in the foot and ended up being around midfield. If it squibs and goes to where it was going to go,
yeah, maybe
it's a little bit different.
Sure.
Yeah, but that was a weird decision. But again, like, not every decision you make in a game is going
to
be.
But I only ask this because, and I'm not trying to dump on Kirby. He might be the best in-game coach in college football. I don't know. I also think his players are so good, and for the most part are better than the opposing team, that sometimes it almost feels like that team is choke-proof. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I just think this is why the question when we get to that
level. By the way, the answer is no one. I don't trust anyone more than Kirby Smart.
No, of course.
Like that's the ultimate answer.
Of course you don't. Of course you don't. And especially if you're thinking of it in a game against him. Like, if you're talking about Steve Sarkisian's Texas Longhorns playing Kirby Smart's Georgia Bulldogs, of course you trust Kirby more because he's done it over and over again, and he just did it again on Saturday. I think it gets a little bit more complicated when you start talking about some of these other coaches against each other. I think Kirby is the only one on this list that we have right here. Dabo's on it, so he's got one. But Kirby and Dabo are the only guys on this list that have actually done the thing, which is win the national championship.
And they've gone head-to-head quite a bunch.
But that's
not how that goes.
I think it has to be a little bit more nuanced than that, because you can't just say you don't trust someone because they haven't won a national championship, because no one in college football has won a national championship except for those two guys.
You brought up that Kirby made mistakes earlier that he learned from. There are guys on this list that are coaching top 10 teams that continue to make the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's a problem, especially when those mistakes cost you games against teams of liker, equal quality squad.
Yeah.
Like,
because to me, that's what it comes
down to. Dan Lanning tried.
Yeah.
He tried.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Against Ohio State, he tried. He cost that team points at the end of the first half.
Mm-hmm.
He tried.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Day tried harder.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, I mean,
to me, that's what it came down to. Like, not to minimize the efforts of the guys, because the guys went out there and played, and they played great. It was an incredible football game. But when it came to crunch time, and you have to be just meticulous about the attention to detail and know exactly what's happening at every second, because every second counts when you're trying to win a game on the road and it's a one-point
game.
And you're you don't know to call a timeout coming out of a penalty like that. And
but at the
quarterback
same time,
loses track of the clock and slides down and ends the game. That's an entire operation failure in order for that to
happen. To Dan Lanning's credit, he runs a 12th man onto the field with some wonky idea.
If you believe that he did that on purpose, well, which I'm still not convinced that he did. But here's the thing.
Took credit for it.
Here's kind of how I'm looking at the trust meter. Because if you ask a fan of Oregon how much you trust Dan Lanning, right now, they would say they would argue that
comparatively to
they
what
trust
they've
him
had,
more than anything.
I would agree with that.
Dan Lanning is the best coach in the country that hasn't won a national championship.
Maybe, I might agree to that comment.
Maybe he is. Maybe he isn't. But they're number one right now. They're undefeated, and that fan base believes it. Where does the general college football fan fall on Dan Lanning? I'm not sure. I think you're probably a better representative of that than me because I'm very biased against them and him and all that sort of stuff. But I think the answer on Kirby is the same no matter who you ask. The answer on Ryan Day is different no matter who you ask. I think the general college football fan probably has a higher opinion of him than Ohio State fans do. I think Ohio State fans are down on him more than the average college football fan. And that happens a lot. Sometimes the folks that are too close to it are too close to it. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not. But I think that's an example of the people that are diehards of that program being more out on that guy than the general college.
When you're too close to it, you're on one of two sides, right? You're either more critical than you should be or less critical than you should be.
You're extreme.
Very rarely as critical as you should be. I think Ryan Day deserves a lot of questions. A lot more than Dan Lanning, in my opinion. I feel like Ryan Day has had the best team in the country at least twice or in that discussion, and they've played for the national championship once and lost. I mean, Dan Lanning, I think, has overperformed thus far. Ryan Day has underperformed. The one who has performed as par is James Franklin.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. James Franklin.
He's never lost a game he shouldn't lose.
He takes a lot of heat.
I mean, practically.
Right. He takes a lot of heat for not winning those big games, but almost every single time he's lost one of those big games, they're underdogs dramatically.
Are they ever better in that big game? They never walk in the better team.
Right. They're never favored
until
this
year.
Now, sometimes you're allowed to win games when you're not favored, right?
No.
Like, you are allowed.
By the way, he did at Vanderbilt, which is what got him the job.
Yeah. And my one that I'm kind of interested in here is because I think that one is going to be the same until he beats Ohio State. I think he'll probably beat Michigan this year. If he doesn't beat Michigan this year, then they have bigger problems. Because if you're supposed to be the third best team in the country, you should be able to beat a team that, you know, just lost to Washington and Illinois and other teams. Your school has a guy that just
total wild card.
I think you guys, I would assume you and fans of Indiana probably have a significantly higher opinion of him than the general college football fan does, just because the general college football fan doesn't even know who Kurt Cignetti is.
I don't know if I have an opinion. I think it's too early. I obviously, like, he's made a difference in the program. I've seen a number of first year coaches make a difference and then just settle to the norm. So we'll see where that goes. I don't know much about. This past week against Nebraska was the first time that they, in my opinion, wildly outperformed the expectation. I mean, that should have been a close game. That was a game that scared you as an Indiana fan, and they blew them out.
I got a good answer on the squib kick, by the way. Was trying to kick a line drive to land around the 20. It was mishit. So
no, I figured they talked about that on the sideline. It was a mishit. The guy made a good play to get a paw up. But also, why? Like, just do what you've been doing and make them drive?
Yeah, that was my thought. Just pin them back and let the defense.
Why take any risk, any chance?
Take any yardage off the drive.
Still
didn't
college
make any
kickers.
Sense to me.
Cignetti's a total wild card.
He is.
You won't know. I mean, when will you know? Maybe home against Michigan. Don't trick that one off.
Yeah,
at Ohio State, I guess if you find a way to win that game.
If they beat Ohio State, then I think you'll really, really
know. But, like,
know.
If they lose that game and
then you still feel good about them,
and
that's okay.
I will tell people this because a lot of people have not watched Indiana football.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana has traditionally, no matter how bad they are, played Ohio State incredibly tough.
It's true.
For three quarters. And then they give up a 21-0 fourth quarter, and it's a blowout.
The guy that has absolutely zero trust right now from his fan base is Kalen DeBoer.
Oh, I was going to say Marcus Freeman.
And him, too, although they've rebounded a little after losing that game. They only have one loss, and who knows? College football's crazy. If they keep winning, they could play their way back into the thing. Kalen DeBoer coming off of what felt like a validation win when they beat Georgia.
Right.
Has immediately followed it up with, I mean, the worst way you could possibly follow that up. They've lost two out of three. Obviously, losing to Vanderbilt was bad. And then they lose again this past weekend to Tennessee. They've got Missouri this weekend, who isn't as good as some people thought they might be this year, but isn't bad.
They don't have to try that hard to lose,
though.
That's
the thing. That's the thing is, are they – Alabama's certainly more talented than them, but the way Alabama's playing right now –
Well, they're more talented in Tennessee and more talented in Vanderbilt.
I think that's right. I do think Tennessee's really talented.
I do, yes.
I think Tennessee deserves a lot of credit for the way that they play on defense and winning that football game.
I mean, it's unfair to say.
That's
like, if Nick Saban's there, they don't lose that game.
Probably.
Like, that's an unfair comment. I get that.
I guess probably. I don't know. Brandon Adams said that when we talked to him after the Alabama Georgia game. He goes, I know that Alabama won the game, but Nick Saban wouldn't have allowed it to ever be close if they got out to that lead. I don't know. I suppose that's probably true.
Can I give you one more wild card that I think we find out about this weekend, along with Kurt Cignetti a little bit?
Yeah.
Mike Elko still feels like a wild card there.
Yeah. Again, he's
Texas A&M.
It's early, and he's done well so far. So
it feels like the team's overachieving a little bit.
But, I think he's going to get a little bit more leeway just because it's year one. Brian Kelly's the team they're playing, right?
Yeah, good game.
That is a good game. Where's your trust? I mean, you're a diehard LSU fan. Where are you at with Brian Kelly as far as your trust?
Well, we're going on what he's done in the past right now, so that has to be enough. I mean,
that wasn't convincing.
No, what has he hadn't done anything yet?
Right, so, right.
You had Jaden Daniels, who was, I mean, arguably the best rookie quarterback to come out of that class last year, as of right now.
Sure.
And two pretty good wide receivers over there, and didn't win anything with them. So, you know,
I tell you, I don't trust my coach. I haven't trusted a guy as little as I trust Jed Fish since Tyrone Willingham.
He's
probably
a lot of talk.
Yeah, man.
A lot of talk.
Not good.
And that could change this weekend at Bloomington with game day in attendance, though.
We're going to be 4-4 after we lose to the Hoosiers in front of everybody. Actually, not. Game day is in front of everybody. The game will be played on the Big Ten Network, which is fitting for that one. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to the back page with Bo after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, midday show with Andy and Randy with you here Tuesday afternoon. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Get back into the big story of the day coming up in about 20 minutes from right now. Brandon Adams is going to join us at 1:20 to talk some college football as well. Shout out to everybody that sent over the Kirby Smart quote from the weekend about that kick to start the second half. Here's a quote. They had a different alignment. That was not the planned kick. It was unfortunate. Peyton missed the ball a little bit, and we weren't trying to squib that. There you go. The answer that I seeked was right there. The answer that I sought was right there straight in front of me.
Can I ask you about unplanned kicks? Were you watching Sunday Night Football?
Yes.
Was it Sunday night? Maybe, you know what? Maybe it was one of the afternoon games on Sunday.
Okay.
Did you see the onside kick that went 4 yards?
No, I didn't see that.
There was an onside kick. The kicker, after he obviously mishits it, just like they did here.
Wouldn't have been an onside kick in that Steelers-Jets game.
It would have been one of the afternoon games. Okay. Maybe it was
Raiders-Rams, maybe?
Maybe it was that. Maybe it was 49ers-Chiefs. Okay. I don't remember. The kicker, just hand on the helmet, like, what have I done? Brutal. I was recording a podcast with Garrett at the time, and you could, like, go back to the podcast and see me start to crack up. We've seen it before where a kick doesn't go 10 yards.
Yeah, you just didn't quite.
Buck, it goes 4 yards and hits the ball hits a spiral spin.
Oh,
and it's just.
So he tried to put all the English on it.
And it's spinning 4 yards from him. Yeah. The whole team's like, man, what are we supposed to do?
A perfectly hit onside kick really is one of the fun things to watch.
Well, we caught one last night. The first onside kick from Tampa took a low bounce and then the high bounce. About 7 yards.
Yeah.
and it looped right over the first line of guys. And the smallest, I don't know who was for the Bucks, tiny little fella, came and just snagged it.
I wonder what's harder.
Perfect kick.
Because there's a variety of ways to do it, right? Like you hit that one where you top it and it spins on the ground and then it pops up. You get that high kick. Or you get the one that they did in the South Carolina-Alabama game a couple weeks ago.
A little sidewinder.
Yeah, where he kind of just sliced it. And
I call that the Harvest Moon, by the way.
And
the Crescent Moon or something.
They did one like – now, that one was interesting because he kind of drop kicked it into that sidewinder. You had the one between the Falcons and the Cowboys a couple years ago where the kicker just put it on its side and then kicked it like that, and it spun like a top, and the Falcons players didn't know what to do with it. I mean, that would be – Randy was on the hands team for most of his career, which one he would probably say they all sucked to try to get because you know you're about to get destroyed as soon as you get the football. But anyway, onside kicks can be fun.
I'm going to find this
when you
one
hit them
and send you the video.
All right, let's get to the back page with Bo. Back page, Bo Johnson, every day at this time. Hello, Bo.
So, you know, I try my best not to toot my own horn. But let's talk for a minute about Saquon Barkley here, who you know, one fantasy football analyst here at 99 The Game had ranked right up there in the top of the freaking draft with Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, Breece Hall. I had Saquon right there. But Saquon's not only a pretty awesome football player, but he's also a great teammate. I think y'all brought this up yesterday. Well, I found the audio. Here's Nick Sirianni and Saquon Barkley on the sidelines on Sunday.
You're 13 yards away from your career high. I would love for you to get that. But that's up to you.
It's all good.
I just don't want – I'm going to take out all the starters if they don't score.
You good? Let them eat.
You sure?
Yeah, good.
You sure?
I promise.
Now listen to me. I want you to do it if you want to do it.
It's all good. I'd rather see the young boys eat.
How about that? Could have eclipsed his career high, which may be bonus money. Who knows?
Maybe.
But, yeah, man, turn it up on Sunday. What a great game for Saquon.
Yeah, that's awesome that he let the young guys get in there and get some shine as well. Is he the number one fantasy – producer of the year thus far?
Him points, and Derrick Henry. Derrick
points
wise? I was going to say, I would go with Derrick Henry.
Yeah. Right? Is that?
Well, and Lamar. Yeah. I mean, are you talking about all?
I'm just talking about overall. Who's
got to be Lamar,
the
right? Overall?
Points in
after five touchdowns, it probably is Lamar. Yeah. I'd have to go back and double check that. But yeah. So Saquon that had that awesome game on Sunday, it was in New York versus the Giants.
It's Lamar.
Yeah. It usually is a quarterback. But Saquon or Derrick Henry are probably one and two as far as running backs point scores.
Let me tell you, I can tell you. Lamar, Baker Mayfield are one and two, and then Derrick Henry's number one as far as running backs go, and you got to scroll down and Saquon's number two.
Yep.
Alvin Kamara's number three. Got to scroll further than that. I'm trying to find out where
he probably had a big lead.
Kyron
Kamara
Williams
did
because
he four. Last, he last 2 weeks have been a little
game last week.
Jameer Gibbs is number five. There's Bijan. Bijan is the sixth most productive fantasy running back.
He's starting to pay off his draft.
Yeah, oh yeah,
stock.
Yeah. The last couple weeks have been really good.
So here's another one from Saquon. So I don't know. I got a couple clips here for you. Why are football fans so freaking angry? Like, the New York Giants had no chance. They didn't even want to keep Saquon. They weren't going to pay him. Why are Giants fans got to be being stupid in the parking lot?
That was crazy. That was crazy. I mean, I've seen my jersey get burned before over on social media, but the timing of it, like, I'm locked in. I'm listening to my music. Yeah, that was definitely different. I don't know if I ever experienced anything like that in my life, and, you know, hopefully I don't experience that again. But
what
in
happened?
That moment, I was ready for 3rd and 1. Let's just say that.
I don't know what happened.
His fans in the parking lot burning his jersey and then posting.
He makes it sound like they were burning it with
right
him
in front
inside
of him.
Of it. Like,
yeah,
is that big of a mental blankety blank?
What
like,
they,
just to how, see it burning?
I don't know. I guess did he? They send it to him on social media or something?
They're sending him posts directly. Send him posts directly to him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your big picture question, why are people so mad? I don't know. It does feel, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's always been like this, but it does feel like there's a level of anger involved with some of this that is more than usual. Like, we've been going to games for a long time. I don't remember seeing as, like, there's like a fist fight at every game.
There is.
Like every, and people now video it, and you put it online, and you get knocked out, and then everybody sees it, and that sucks. And
they arrested that Ravens cat. That knocked out the two Commanders
dudes.
He
was just walking down the road sucker punching people because the Ravens won a game.
They put out a warrant for his arrest, and
he
turned himself in. So.
Good.
Did he turn himself in?
Good. Yeah.
I was hoping they went to his house and broke his door down and dragged him out.
But that part of it does, it does seem different. I don't know if it's more people are gambling, so there's money.
I feel like more people are drinking.
You think more people are drinking? I think people
I haven't
have been
seen any of those fights involve sober people.
No, you're probably right about that.
They never involve sober people.
Well, I mean, maybe the like victims.
I think
sober
maybe
person,
just social media and people having cameras in their pocket.
I don't know what it is, but it does seem like a level of anger that is in the stadium
probably already all,
that hasn't
been
there.
You saw
before.
The one at the Falcons game, right?
Which one? There's
which
several.
Game? It's every week.
This was the one when they were doing like behind one of the interviews in the front row.
Oh yeah, I saw that. It was two ladies, right?
Yeah,
I saw that.
Just throwing.
I don't know.
So here's Anthony Richardson talking about angry Colts fans booing them and they won.
I don't really try to pay attention to it, honestly. I heard them booing, but I didn't know who they were booing. No, yeah, it's just football. You know, the supporters in it. Yeah, we know we got to execute, but you got to give them credit too. They dialed it up and did a great job.
People
good answer
these days.
Good answer. I don't know. I don't know what to say. He didn't play very well, so I mean, I guess that's why they were booing him. They won the game though, so.
So maybe Anthony Richardson needs to take a page out of old Danger Russ's playbook on how to deal with adversity.
Okay.
You know, first of all, you know, I really believe in being neutral. You know, not being too high, not being too low. You know, my old mental coach who passed away a couple years ago used to always say, you know, stay the course.
Not too high. Not too low.
He's been just big dangerous on the neutral thing for a while, which is good. I mean, that's a good way to try to be, right? You can maintain a level of calm in all situations. It's impossible. You can't, but try to. Some of us better at it than others, I would say. But that's the
you think that's what he would have
said goal?
If he went out there and threw three interceptions and Justin Fields took the fourth quarter? You think that's what he would have said?
Probably.
Not too high, not too low.
Not too high, not too low.
Stay the course.
Here's what I'll say about Russell Wilson and the narrative shift with him over the last couple of years. He's been saying the same stuff and doing the same stuff the whole time. He just played better, and it was in Seattle, so nobody cared. Then he got traded and got all that money and didn't play good. And then everyone started noticing. But Russell Wilson's been doing the same stuff for a really long time. He's been doing weird stuff for a really long time.
Yeah, he's been weird for a while.
But he used to throw 40 touchdowns a year, and he was in the Pro Bowl. And so no one cared. But, yeah, I mean, yes, I think he would have said the exact same thing. Because he's always said the same thing.
What's the better type of weird? Russell Wilson weird or Jameis Winston weird?
Jameis is
as far as entertainment.
Jameis is a hell of a lot funnier.
Yeah, it's definitely the best.
Yeah. It's definitely Jameis.
I don't think they're – I don't
Russ
think
gets, like, creepily weird sometimes.
I don't think I've ever seeked out – just moments from a backup.
We both did it.
More than Jameis.
Jameis is hilarious. Every time he gets interviewed about anything, even we played about
off-season drills, just all of it.
Yeah, all of it. Remember when he'd just be doing like his quarterback workouts and they'd just be like hitting him with a broom and stuff? What's he doing? I don't know. Jameis needs his own reality show.
Like, or something.
Like he's
reality show podcast.
He's
all
a very unique.
Give me all the Jameis.
The thing about Jameis, though, that I love, I think that's just him. Like he's genuinely like that. Like Russ, I think is different in different situations, which again is fine. It's made him a lot of money, and it's a tactic from a business perspective and all that kind of stuff. But they're both unique. Unique individuals.
So the next person I have that was angry was Jerod Mayo. Deservingly so. They got shellacked in London on Sunday. Then he called his defense soft. Well, here's Bill Belichick standing up for those defensive players. And this is just hilarious.
I don't know. I feel bad for the defensive players on that one because those guys, that's a tough group. I mean, John Jones, Godshaw, Wise, Jennings, those are all the Uche. Those guys are all tough players. Like they'll strap it up and go. Duggar, yeah. I mean, They're tough guys.
Do what now, Bill?
Strap it on. Get out there. Let them have it. I was a little surprised to hear Jerod Mayo say that as well. Motivational tactic, I would assume. Try to get the guys to play harder. But they're not a very good team. So, like, that's the thing about it is, like, you kind of knew that coming
into
it.
Well, that's what's so odd to me about how he's approaching what's going on this year as a head coach. It's like, unless you were just misunderstood, you should have known, like, it's one thing if the Falcons, well, never mind. But, you know, like you knew what was headed your way. Why risk losing the team?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll motivate him. Maybe it'll get him fired up.
Or maybe it'll get him fired.
Not this year.
Not this year.
I think he's got some leeway.
Year one?
Antonio Pierce might be out.
Yes. I think that's a bit of a different situation, but yes, he may very well be.
He had a half of last year.
Did you see who they signed, by the way? The Raiders?
Yeah, I sure did.
Can't believe we didn't have this in what's
Dime
trending.
Dime store Dez.
Desmond Ridder. Las Vegas Raider.
He'll still be the
Bailey
backup.
Bailey Zappi just got another job, too.
There's a chance me and Randy's trip to Vegas just got more interesting. The Desmond Ridder revenge game?
Y'all should try to have Des on the show.
That would be the first time. Literally never talked to him.
He's not a good interview.
I don't doubt it, but he was the starting quarterback for the team for a year. Never talked to him. That ought to tell you something. Normally, every other starting quarterback the Falcons have ever had, we've interviewed. Never talked to Des. Other shows may have, but we didn't.
He was definitely on somewhere.
Probably was on somewhere. Every other guy we talked to, even backups we've talked to, but not
I think he was on. Was I working with John and Hugh?
I don't know.
Somehow I let them know about the DoorDashing, and now Freaky's obviously run with it.
It's funny. It's funny that he calls him that.
Aiden O'Connell being out, Des should actually be the backup this
season. He is. Yeah, they got a rookie on their practice squad. Yeah. Desmond Ridder's going to be like the primary backup.
There it is.
So does Gardner get pulled for Des at some point?
Probably.
I bet he does.
Yeah, that probably happens. Wow. That probably happens at some point not too long from now. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to the big story of the day to kick off the 1 o'clock hour. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Tuesday afternoon, final hour for us, brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. Abe Gordon in for Randy all week long. We'll get back into the big story of the day just a couple of minutes from right now. Little Raheem Morris audio from the coaches show last night. Brandon Adams going to join us in 20 minutes, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Talk some Georgia Bulldogs, obviously a huge win for them on Saturday night. That was also Kirby's 100th win as the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. Nice little round number there.
You want the stat or should I?
What stat?
Fastest, right?
Oh, I don't know.
One game faster than Saban and like three games faster than, I forgot who the other one was.
Really?
117 games, I think, to 118, something like that.
He's 117.
Something like that. Now, I think that's a little, I mean, it's not taking away from Kirby. But
Detract from Kirby's accomplishment.
I think the
somehow.
Program was in better shape than when Saban took over. Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
He had a 1 year head start.
Okay. Although that first year, you know, like that first year was.
But they were coming off like
a lot
like
of
nine.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe.
He took over a very talented roster. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
again,
that's all.
They had a true freshman quarterback, and that first year was a little bit some bumps in the road, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they were in overtime in the national championship in his second season.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, definitely. But yeah, man, 100 wins incredibly quickly. We'll get Brandon, because obviously it's not the biggest win. It's one of the biggest wins, but it's not the biggest win. The biggest win is the national championship. Second biggest win is probably the second national championship.
It might be the biggest regular season win in like 3-5 years.
It might be the biggest regular season win ever. I don't know. I will get Brandon's perspective on that. My guess is, because that's one of the ones I want to ask him, take all the playoff wins, because there's a handful of playoff wins, take the SEC championship games, take the national championship games, all of the postseason wins that they've had under Kirby, and just use the regular season games. I think my guess is, if I'm predicting, we'll see what he says when we ask him in like 15 minutes. My guess is he'll say that Notre Dame game, the year that they went to the national championship and didn't win it. I think that that's the one that he'll say, but I don't know. I don't know if it is. Maybe it's the Clemson game, the year that they won the national championship to start the season. Maybe it's another one that I'm forgetting, but we'll ask Brandon Adams about that in about 15 minutes, along with other questions. And then we'll get to an AMA to wrap the show up at 1:40. Any question, any topic. Phone lines will be open, 404-726-0929. All you got to do is call us up and ask us anything that you want. And with that, we'll get to the big story of the day. Kick off the 1 o'clock hour. Just leave a little gap there in case you had something on your mind. Bow. Bow!
Bow!
You with me, man? We got one more hour to do.
You know, we joked the other day when we had that mix-up, and Bijan almost passed him by thinking, no way I got this guy, and he did not. So, you know, no matter how many times you see that, he was not responsible for him. But Bijan was thinking the same thing. But, you know, Vita is one of those guys you got a game for him. You got a game plan for him. You got to get hands on him across the board. You got to make sure he's double-teamed when you can. He's powerful. He's strong. He can play the run. He can play the pass. And we don't need him crawling on us again. You know, he's a very good player that can make a lot of plays, and we got to find a way to limit his effectiveness on the game, no matter what he's doing.
So that's Raheem from last night. Big story of the day, as always, brought to you by QC Kinetics, non-surgical treatment for joint pain.
I was waiting on that. Yeah, see, I'd been waiting on that, and then you threw me for a loop.
So,
backed up the bus on me.
Vita Vea did. I did. Sorry about that. Vita Vea, just a monster in the middle for Tampa, as everybody knows. It's funny to watch an NFL game and see individuals that look that much more unique than the other giant freaks that are also out there, because everyone that's on the field, for the most part, especially from a lineman perspective, are just the biggest guys you would ever actually meet in real life. But then when you see Derrick Henry running the way that he was running last night at that size, or you get a shot of Vita Vea standing next to one of his lineman teammates, it's just like, damn, like, to be that much different than those guys that are that much different than everyone else is crazy.
It's never like the wide receiver that takes your breath away. It's especially athletically, it's the big guys. Like when they do things that much smaller guys should be the only ones that are able to do that. That's the one that's kind of, it almost terrifies me a little bit. Do you remember the first time you ever stood near an offensive lineman? Because growing up, a high level NFL offensive lineman. Growing up, I just thought offensive linemen were kind of fat, out of shape, did their job, very strong.
Yeah.
And then, like, you see them without the jersey and the pads, I'm like, he's not fat at all. Like, at all. He's just a monster. The first one for me was when I first started covering the Buccaneers almost 20 years ago. It was like Davin Joseph. He's a first-round pick out of Oklahoma. And I stood next to him, I'm like, there's no body fat, man. What's going on here?
Well, it's a funny phenomenon of going to, you know, like a Power 5 school, because even guys that aren't, you know, that end up being like starting NFL linemen or at whatever position. Like, you might have like your anthropology 101 class, and some of the football players are in there. And it's like, dang, these guys are a lot bigger than the guys that were on the high school team. That's for sure. It's like, these guys are freaks. These guys are huge. And then when I was there, they were also terrible. So it's like, these guys are the biggest, fastest, most ridiculous athletes in the state of Washington, and they're 1-11. What a disaster.
Can I provide the flip side to this? At the time, not now, but at the time, Indiana, not exactly a football school.
Sure.
And the starting middle linebacker was in one of my classes, and he's like my size. I'm like, you?
Well, I shouldn't have been.
You just won Big Ten Player of the Week? You? You're 5'9".
All that to say, Vita Vea will be on the field when the Falcons take on the Bucs on Sunday. A few things have changed from the last time that they played, and even from last night. Chris Godwin had just a horrifying injury. The Bucs receiver, who's having a great season, by the way, one of the best seasons he's had. He gets hurt late in that Monday Night Football game last night. Mike Evans gets hurt as well. Looked like it was his hamstring that
he's got an MRI scheduled. Yeah.
So he's not going to be able to go. And the Falcons, who had all this positive momentum coming off those three straight wins in division, one of them being against Tampa in overtime, one of the most fun games that I can remember covering for this Falcons team over the last handful of years, went on and crapped the bed against the Seahawks on Sunday, and the momentum has stalled a bit. Now, you add those injuries into the mix that Tampa has. Like, you got to go win this football game, man. Like, you need to win this game against Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're decimated.
You always had the pass rush question for the Atlanta Falcons. You're going to continue to have the pass rush question. But now you add in this other thing of, will they show up? Which team do we get on a weekly basis? And that's not a good question that you want to be asking. Hopefully they can get back on to what we saw in their first three NFC South games, and they could look like they're ready to roll and take it too. The other thing here is what is it really going to take to beat this team? And I know that's not the mindset they can have, but when you talk about like limiting Vita Vea and like, this is not, it should not be a game that you have to win on offense. Like, Baker Mayfield's throwing to Sterling Shepard and Jalen McMillan. This should be a game you can handle from the defensive perspective.
Right.
That, like, you don't need to, you shouldn't need to score 31 to win this one.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. You
shouldn't.
Now, right. I'll tell you what scares me.
I think they're going to.
No.
I think they're going to need to. And that's
Baker Mayfield's an odd back against the wall type of guy, too, where I can see him having a really good game just because that's what he does sometimes.
Yeah, he does. And, I mean, we saw it, especially in the first half when the Falcons played him on Thursday night a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he gets – I don't know if there's a quarterback in the NFL that's more I don't like streaky feels disrespectful to how well he's playing, but you know what I mean? Like when he gets on a heater, he's one of the best passers in the league. Baker Mayfield can get hot for a half, and again, you saw it on Thursday
night. You just pulled up the fantasy stats. He's the second leading, and I know fantasy's not real, but it's also not, you know, it's not totally irrelevant.
Right, it doesn't mean he's the second best quarterback in the NFL, but he's producing. He's compiling stats. Yeah. And again, we don't have to go that far into the past to see what he did against the Falcons the first half of that Thursday night football game.
Couple of Mike Evans.
So, yeah, right. Couple of wide open Mike Evans. Now, Mike Evans is not going to be out there. Mike Evans, just perennially a Falcon destroyer, is not going to be out there. So you don't have to worry about that as much. But again, Kate Otten's not bad. Jalen McMillan's young, but he's not bad. Sterling Shepard's not a bad player. Like, they still have the running backs that are pretty solid and had good games against the Falcons a couple of weeks ago. I can't go into that game and just be like, well, the Falcons defense should be able to limit them to this, because I haven't seen the Falcons defense do that over the last 3 weeks.
I don't think after Sunday's effort, you can ask any part of the team to let another aspect win it. Like, everyone has to show up and look better than they did.
The identity of this Falcons team for me right now starts with Kirk Cousins. When they're playing their best, Kirk Cousins is in rhythm, the pass game is going, and the offense is the backbone. He was okay on Sunday, made some mistakes, sure, didn't get help by the receivers, but if Kirk Cousins is just okay going forward, they're not going to win a lot of those games.
I would also argue
not the way that the defense is playing.
I would also argue to an extent the defense's identity was not giving up big plays, and that's exactly what they did in really bad moments on Sunday.
When Jaxon Smith-Njigba threw that pass, what was going through your mind?
As it was in the air?
I can't believe he threw that. Like, he just threw a lollipop into triple coverage.
I was very upset at A.J. Terrell. Why are we basket catching? Go get the ball, man. Like, their guy high-pointed it. You were in better position at the start of that.
When he let go, I was like, I can't. Is he really throwing this? All right. And then DK just went, yeah, dunk ball. We got it. Three guys. Not good. All right. We'll come back and get to Brandon Adams. We'll ask him that question about regular season wins and where Saturday ranks. Get his thoughts on all kinds of different Georgia-related stuff. The defense playing like that. The Kirby audio that we've since heard. Obviously, his thoughts on the referees and the decision that they made. Imagine Brandon kept it real cool while that was happening on Saturday night. So, Brandon Adams next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. This hour brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. 20 minutes away from the AMA. Any question, any topic, we'll get the phone lines open and you can ask us anything. But 120 Tuesdays, Brandon Adams joins the show, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. And BA, I got to imagine that was a very fun viewing experience for you on Saturday night, with moments of like just fury in the middle. Like when that was happening with the refs and all the garbage on the field and all that stuff, I would have paid money to see your reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, it was probably one of the wildest games that I think I've been a part of, because what you just said, that I think for me and a lot of the Georgia fans, it's this simultaneous feeling of true euphoria because you're beating the number one team in the country on the road, and yet also total, you know, enraged anger because of what the officials did, you know, in terms of, as Kirby says, they tried to steal it from us. You know, you had both those things kind of going on at the same time. It created quite a sort of a potent, I guess, mix for Georgia fans. Really one of the wildest sort of emotional roller coasters I think I've probably ever been on.
I want to ask you about that Kirby statement. Everyone's heard it by now, I'm sure. There was a lot of great stuff in it, but one part was when he said that they tried to rob it from us. They tried to take it from us. What did you make of him saying that on the field right after the game?
So to me, it was a very human moment from Kirby, because I feel like when I do my show, and, you know, Andy, I don't know if you're the same way or not, but I have to have like a little certain filter that I speak through, because if I'm not careful, you know, I don't like everybody and I don't like everything. And I might just come on one day and just start telling the truth about everything that I feel, and in a way that might, you know, get me in some trouble. Well, you know, we use a filter to make sure that we kind of don't take it too far with certain things. But if you just got through playing a football game, in this case, Kirby coaching one, that filter doesn't work quite the same way. And so if you listen to Kirby in this post-game interview right after the game is over with and compare that to the press conference, which is like 20 minutes later, there's a little bit more of a cool down, a little bit more relaxed. Like what Kirby says on the field with the, you know, sideline reporter is a lot closer, I think, his actual feelings mm-hmm. than maybe what he says when he has time to kind of turn the filter back on. And so I think if you're a Georgia fan, the thing that you like about this entire ordeal is Kirby Smart, your athletic director, Josh Brooks. There was a pretty strong defense of Georgia in this, in that the official totally, you know, broke protocol, did not administer the game properly. It was essentially anarchy. And this was a time in which I think it was not just okay to lose your cool. I think it was appropriate to lose your cool. And in that moment, immediately after the game, Kirby just kind of let it rip. So if you're a Georgia fan, I think you love it.
B.A., thought one of the keys heading into this game was Carson Beck had to be cleaner throughout the game than Quinn Ewers. And I don't necessarily Quinn Ewers wasn't very clean, but I wouldn't say Carson Beck was either. Three interceptions. I know it wasn't all on him. Is this just part of the process with the Georgia offense? Is there a way you can maybe get this thing to run without the turnovers?
Yeah, at this point, I don't know. I've certainly tried to sell it on the idea of it's a process growing in the right direction, and now I'm just not quite so sure. Here's what I'll say is, and I kind of joked about this a little bit on Monday, this is the version of Georgia that everybody who's not a Georgia fan hates, because Georgia played pretty sloppy offensively. You know, Kirby even joked about how many drops there were. There may have been 8 or 9. There were definitely 3 interceptions. Carson didn't throw a touchdown. That's a pretty, overall, just bad day offensively. Yeah. And yet Georgia won by 15 points at Texas. Like, that's a really obnoxious level of success when your offense misfired as badly as Georgia's did on Saturday, which leads you to believe if they ever could put it together for a complete game, then my goodness, what does that add up to, right? I mean, you know, there's a chance that Georgia's got an A-level performance that no one has a chance to match. But we're also however many games into this thing now, and maybe that just never quite shows up. So I think we're still as unknown as ever in terms of what Georgia's actually going to be. Will they ever find the gear offensively while also playing well defensively? Perhaps they won't. But if they do, man, oh, man, whoever they're playing that day is going to be in some real trouble.
Do you think there's any chance of sort of altering the game plan or what they thought was possible with Carson Beck, given the way that it's gone through this point of the season? Like, all right, we thought we could run these plays. We thought the offense could look like this. I don't know that we can. Maybe we downshift and go this way. Because, like, an A-level performance would be insane. I think you'd take, like, a C-level performance, C-plus level performance from Carson Beck right now, given what some of these big game games have looked like from him. So I just wonder if it seems pretty clear that everyone was mistaken about what type of quarterback he was. Do you have to change the way that you call games now with him?
Well, so I don't know that I 100% agree with that from the standpoint that it's not like that people who are making their opinions about Carson were basing it on, like, potential alone. Beck played last year better than he played this year.
Yep.
And now you can say, well, Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers. But the truth is Ladd McConkey was hurt almost all of last year, and Brock Bowers was certainly hurt for a portion of last year. So, I mean, I think that Beck still has better play in him than he's shown this season. I can't fully explain why it hasn't been more consistently, you know, better, but I do believe, based on a proof of concept from a year ago, that Beck's got better play in him. And, you know, you can snicker at this if you want to. I also think that Beck throwing the ball is probably still better for Georgia than the old school keep chopping mentality of Kirby Smart when it comes to the running game. I mean, I think it's pretty telling on Saturday that when Georgia had some early success with the running game, that didn't create more rushing plays throughout the game. I think that's probably a little bit of a tell. They don't completely trust their ability to open up those holes and create consistent kind of gashing plays in the running game. And by the way, the fact they did not get the 4th and short at the end of the game that would have ended the game, that's probably evidence that supports their point that I don't think they have full confidence in the running game. So for as spotty at times as Beck and the receiver play has been, that is probably still their bread and butter offensively. I mean, I want to say, I may have the specific percentage off, but I think directionally correct. I want to say they're throwing it like 60-something% of the time this year. That is a wild imbalance compared to what Georgia typically would be, and the fact that's coming with some back struggles, or at least the perception of some back struggles, makes that even more alarming. But I just think that speaks to they do believe, for as spotty as it's been, that's still their best option offensively.
Brandon Adams with Dog Nation, host of Dog Nation Daily, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. B.A., we always thought the potential was there on the defensive side of the ball. Now we've seen it. So kind of a two-part question. What did Georgia do to unlock it, and how did they continue to showcase that level of defensive performance consistently every game moving forward?
Well, to me, it's two things. Thing number one is, and this hasn't gotten as much attention, but you had three guys that played the lion's share of the snaps in, like, regular running down situations. Christian Miller and Warren Brinson and Azeer Stackhouse. Mm-hmm. And Georgia really shut down the run in this game in a way they have not been doing for probably the last 2 years. Now, some of that's because Texas isn't great running the ball right now, but still, Georgia gets a lot of credit for that. But even better, man, I think that a lot of Georgia fans have been waiting for a while to see the edge rush play. This is the spot where you probably have some of your better overall recruits, but also maybe some of your most unrealized potential. But Mikael Williams looked healthier on Saturday. Jalen Walker, who's kind of a hybrid, a little bit of an inside and outside guy, I mean, he looks like probably the most draftable player on the Georgia roster at the moment, and probably the highest drafted player, you know, for this upcoming spring. And in addition to that, you know, Damon Wilson, a former five-star, he may have played some of his best football ever. So some of this was a position group for Georgia that is among the most valuable positions in football overall, but at times has kind of under-indexed its performance. Well, Saturday that was not the case. Jalen Walker had basically a historic day. Mikael Williams was certainly taking strides towards being what he can be, and Damon Wilson is solidly in the mix too. Good day for Georgia coming off the edge, and that made it really tough on Texas.
B.A., I don't know if you've given this any thought thus far. There's just been so much like good actual football stuff to talk about, but I think it's an interesting topic. 100th win for Kirby on Saturday night in his tenure at UGA. Obviously, you take out the championship wins, the playoff wins, the SEC championship. Just talking about regular season wins, where would you put what happened on Saturday night in terms of ranking them?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's a fun topic. I would have it number two. To me, the biggest regular season win in the Kirby Smart era was beating Clemson in 2021. Okay. As a Clemson team that had been in six straight playoffs and had won two national championships, that was a real underdog spot for Georgia, where they had to raise their level to be as good as Clemson had been, and they were able to do that day. I'd put this number two just ahead of Tennessee in 2022 because I do think this Texas team is probably better on par than on both sides of the ball than Tennessee was then. But for me, it'd be that order. Clemson in 21, I believe it's the best regular season win for Kirby. I think this is second. I think the Tennessee win we all remember from a couple of years ago in Athens is probably third.
B.A., you head into an off week now. You've got the cocktail party against Florida on the other side. If there was something you feel Kirby Smart is going to take this extra time and focus on with his team, what do you think that might be?
Well, I do think they got to try to figure out how to get these receivers to catch the ball better. I don't know how much you do that during the season, but you got to try to figure out some way to be a little bit more reliable. And I think that Kirby kind of tipped his hand Saturday night, too, when it comes to the back end of the defense. For as good of a day as it was for Georgia defensively, only giving up 15 points, he said that, hey, we still got to finish plays better on the back end. Hard to know exactly what he was referencing there, but obviously, you know, you had a couple of, you know, big completions for Texas in the game, I guess. And so that's still a sticking point for Georgia, too, where I think they want to be a little bit more sure in the secondary. And perhaps some of that's young players like Ellis Robinson continuing to be on the rise or whatever it is. But I think that's probably the two things right now. Got to be a little bit more sure-handed when you try to catch the ball. And I think he still wants to see a secondary play a little bit more soundly to go along with what was seemingly a very good day for the front seven.
We had this conversation in the noon hour just about like trust meter with all of the coaches in college football. Kirby's one, obviously, no question, take him out of it. But just think about the other coaches in the SEC. Like, if you're talking about a game that you need that team to win, who's the coach in the SEC non-Kirby that you trust the most?
Well, I'll tell you who's kind of coming to their own a little bit right now. And, you know, if I thought about this longer, I may give you a better answer. But I do think it's interesting how little attention Brian Kelly gets because of, you know, they lose week one seemingly every year, right? And so they're kind of off the radar after that. I don't think that people really like Kelly. But he made a pretty big statement, I think, after an emotional win at Ole Miss, I should say at home against Ole Miss 2 weeks ago, going on the road this past weekend, and they handled Arkansas pretty easily.
Yep.
He's probably got the best quarterback in the SEC in Garrett Nussmeier, and they're just playing better defensively than they maybe have in a good while. Obviously, they brought over Blake Baker from Missouri. I think pretty quietly a guy like Brian Kelly is performing week to week pretty well from a coaching standpoint. And I don't quite know that people have fully recognized that yet. So I think to a degree LSU is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I guess if I could add another one here, it's obvious that Mike Elko is a tremendous upgrade from Jim Harbaugh from a coaching – not Harbaugh, but Jimbo Fisher from a coaching standpoint, obvious coaching upgrade. And it could get pretty interesting for the Aggies. They also have a fairly favorable schedule as you start thinking about a major showdown with Texas near the end of the year.
Well, I was going to say, what do you know? Those two coaches play each other on Saturday night on ABC, LSU, Texas A&M.
That's
should be a really fun one. Hey, enjoy the off Saturday. I would say from an emotional standpoint, certainly earned it last Saturday. We appreciate it, VA.
I've never been happier to have Georgia not playing a game than this upcoming Saturday. I think we all probably needed after this past weekend, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, just take a breath, and then it's a cocktail party. Brandon Adams, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily as well. And yeah, I mean, it's always, I don't know, I always hate during seasons when my team has a bye week because you like watching them play, except when they suck or if they win a really big game like Georgia just did. A really nice time to have a week off. Conversely, Washington didn't play last week, and that was great. It was great to not have to watch them not run the ball when they have a really good running back. We'll be right back to it on Saturday, though, in Bloomington. Can't wait to see Jonah Coleman get 11 carries and average 9 yards per.
Well, look, the game will be out of hand. You have to start throwing the ball. Indiana's got 45 points on the board.
If Washington goes down by 7, that's how they feel. We're down 7, got to throw it. Must-pass situations. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an AMA. Any question, any topic? The phone lines are wide open. Load them up. Ask us anything. 404-726-0929. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.